it's Fern here, popping in quickly before the show because I really want to hear from you. I am forever grateful to you every single time you press play on an episode of Happy Place. And this show really is for you. So in the interest of doing more stuff that you love and less of the stuff you're not bothered by, I would love it if you took a couple of minutes to fill out a little survey for me. The link will be in the show notes. Your input on the content and the format and the guests and all those types of things is so important to help me and the Happy Place team shape the future of Happy Place. So just click on the link in the show notes to share all your thoughts and musings. I appreciate you loads. Just a note before we start, this episode contains language some listeners might find difficult to hear. So check the show notes for details. Hello, I'm Fern Cotton, and this is Happy Place, the show that celebrates every facet of what makes you, you. Today, I'm chatting to Billy Porter.
I know that what I'm doing and the work that I'm doing is necessary, particularly right now, being Black and queer with a platform to speak truth to power. And when I was growing up, there was a thing called protest music that, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot of this time around the regressive sun. You know, we win, love always wins and all of that. And as artists, I feel like it's our responsibility to get in these conversations.
Billy began his stage and screen career in the 90s, but it's only more recently that his profile has gone absolutely stratospheric. He's released a brand new single called Broke a Sweat, and it was really eye-opening to hear in this chat how different his experience of making music this time round has been compared to when he started 30 years ago. I spoke to Billy while he was in New York just last week, and we talked about why he feels artists have a real political obligation to speak out if they can. Art can be such a powerful medium for all of us when we really feel we have something to say. I also wanted to hear, in his own words, why he feels clothes are so empowering, because my God, his clothes are epic. I think you're absolutely going to love this chat.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
We'll get to Billy in a moment, but first, a massive thank you to everyone who came to the Happy Place Festival at the weekend and earlier on in the summer at our first event. You lot were amazing. I love you all. I can't believe we've done it. If you want to connect with our festival experts and also prioritise your well-being all year round, don't miss our Happy Place app summer offer. Sign up today for 40% off a whole 12 months of unlimited access to the Happy Place app. That's just $29.99 for a whole year, and the offer ends this Sunday, the 10th of September. All right then, here's the show. Hey, Billy.
Good morning. It's morning for me. It's not morning for you. How are you?
Yeah, where are you?
I'm in New York today. I was in LA over the weekend, and I'm back in New York City.
I just missed you because you were in the UK, and I would have loved to have seen you in the flesh.
I was. I'll be back to the
UK. Oh, good.
And you'll see me in the flesh when I come
back. How was your London trip? You like the UK, right?
I do. I really like the UK. My trip was amazing. You know, Baby Was a Dancer, one of my singles went number one on BBC Two Radio, which I'm told is like the biggest pop station in Europe, which is amazing for, you know, a man of a certain age who is really defying the odds and, you know, really thriving and succeeding in spaces that are generally reserved for children. You know, generally people enter the music industry as children and then they grow into legacy artists. I have lived a full career and life, and I'm sort of entering the market, re-entering the market as an adult. And so my trip over there was really beautiful because I was able to see people face to face, talk to people face to face, really get in the space with people, you know, so that you all understand who I am. I think one of the greatest parts about being a recording artist is that it's you, it's me. You know, I'm also an actor, so I play characters and people fall in love with characters that aren't actually me, you know? And so it's been amazing. I just did a 25 city tour back in May, and it was amazing to be back in front of audiences as myself and to really be able to speak from who I am and where I am and what I believe in and all of that stuff. So yeah, I love London. I'll be back.
Yeah, well, I think everyone in the UK loves you. We absolutely loved you being here, and it's great that you've got new music and your new album coming out. And it is so interesting. Well, there's two things I want to talk about here. I think the first is, yes, you know, we all know the music industry is incredibly young. It seems to be getting younger by the year. You know, we have got sort of kids releasing records. And I think the message that puts out across the board, whatever career you're in, is that's where your peak is. Your peak is when you are, you know, teens, 20s. And actually, you're totally disproving that one and saying, no, you can do whatever you want, whenever you want. And we need to hear that message more.
Yeah, and we need to see it more often. And so therefore, the gatekeepers have to be more open to when it's necessary. You know, I know that what I'm doing and the work that I'm doing is necessary on all fronts, particularly right now, being Black and queer and out and at the forefront with a voice, with a platform to speak truth to power. We're there again. And when I was growing up, there was a thing called protest music that, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot of this time around. This time around, the regressive sun, this time around, the conservative taking over, you know, trying to take over everything, you know, because the world, it's in a circle, that circle of life. So like, you know, it's always going to come back around. You know, we win, love always wins and all of that. And as artists, I feel like it's our responsibility to get in these conversations and make a difference. Toni Morrison speaks of it. I'm paraphrasing, but she says something like, this is the time when artists go to work. There's no room for shame, no need for fear. We write, we speak, we do language. This is how civilizations heal. I take my art and my purpose and my calling, dare I say my ministry, because I do dare, very seriously, you know. And it's really, really important to me that I show up in the way that I do.
Yeah. And I'm imagining that feels, well, it's obviously taken years and years of extreme hard graft to get to that place where you're able to show up as you and to be celebrated in that way. And it's a beautiful thing. But when you look back to your first batch of music in the 90s, where, you know, you've talked about you had to show up as straight and you were very good at pretending to be straight at the time. Mm-hmm. Looking back at that era, how do you feel?
I am really happy that it didn't happen for me at that time. Because had it exploded in the way that I thought it should have, was talented enough for it to, felt entitled to, you know, whatever, the fact that it didn't happen forced me, and it didn't just not happen, it imploded. You know, it was really emotionally violent for me, the end of that first deal. And I am grateful that, because it forced me to go deeper, it forced me to challenge myself creatively in ways that had it happened quickly for me on all fronts, I don't know that I would have ever been challenged to find my truth. I don't know that I would have ever been forced to find the real me and lead with that. I don't know that I would have, because I would not have had to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, timing is key, isn't it? We have to trust the process, and it's often terrifying to do that. Terrifying. I'm really interested in getting to this place where you're able to really feel that you're being authentically you, because we hear this thrown about all the time at the moment, like, be authentically you. And a lot of us will go, how? I don't know who the hell I am. You know, how did you start to peel back those layers? How did you know you were moving in the right direction to liberate yourself, to be truly you?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And it has different answers. First of all, I always knew that I was gay. And I was told under no uncertain terms, that from haters and allies alike, that my queerness would be my liability. So I was already fighting that before I could even really comprehend what that meant. I was already labeled a faggot at age 8, you know, before I even knew, before the people who were labeling me even knew what it meant. You know what I mean? Like, we had language before we even knew what things meant sometimes. And then vice versa, most of the time. But this gay thing, this queer thing, this faggot thing was always at the forefront of everybody's lips. So to have that, and then to have this extreme talent, my singing voice at that time, that everybody responded to. And it was as if it was like magical. When I sang, the venom and the hatred over my sexuality went away. So it was confusing while simultaneously empowering. It was like I was empowered to dive deep into this creative space in order to protect myself, protect my life, protect my, like, I had to protect myself. So my voice became my armor. My voice became my weapon to fight back. My art became those things.
Well, do you know what? I think it's so interesting that, you know, you were quite literally sort of singing to survive, which creates a lot of confusion when you've got this gift and you know that you can sing and it's inherently there and it's yours. But it's not all pure joy just singing. You're singing for survival. So that's really complicated. It's not just something that you can leap into joyfully, like, I can sing and it feels amazing. There's also, as you say, this armor you're having to put on. Did that create a lot of confusion around what that gift was, why you had it? Why, you know, did you resent having to have that voice and to sing?
No, that's an unequivocal no. Because my voice saved me. The response to the voice was always positive until my record deal. It was always positive. People didn't always necessarily know what to do with me, you know, in the theater, which is where I was mostly navigating at that time. You know, they didn't know what to do with me, but there was a gift that could not be denied. Ultimately, it could not be denied. And ultimately, I understand that and knew that and played that to my best ability.
Yeah. So I was listening to you doing an interview, I don't know how long ago it was now, but you were talking about your 30s being challenging, because that was a point where you decided you wanted to show up to auditions or to jobs as you and to stop suppressing your sexuality or trying to be something that you weren't. And that was a challenging period because the work seemingly dried up at that time. How did you navigate that and keep your self-worth intact?
Well, I did a lot of therapy. I did a lot of mindfulness, you know, work. The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron is a book that I swear by. One Day My Soul Opened Up by Ayanna Van Sant. Lots of Oprah episodes. I mean, it was the Oprah episode. It was one particular Oprah episode where she and Maya Angelou and Alanya Van Sant, they were talking about service. And the idea was, you know, the theory was when we shift our intention from ego to service, then everything will work itself out. And I was like, well, what does service look like for me in an industry and, quite frankly, a world that is inherently narcissistic? Like, what does that look like? And it hit me like a ton of bricks. It's your queerness. It's that thing that everybody is telling you is wrong. And it's that thing that feels really wrong today. I know the universe. I'm talking as the universe right now to myself. I know the universe said to me that it looks like there's nothing for you if you choose this road. Choose it anyway. Trust me and choose it anyway. And that was in my early 30s. That was when, you know, my record label, Deviate Records, produced my hit song from the First Wives Club for Celine Dion. And I left. You know, I left the label. I said I didn't come here to be a demo singer. No shade to Celine Dion. She sounds great on the song, but that's my song. And y'all have turned me into a demo singer for Celine Dion, so we're done. And I moved to Los Angeles, and I went into what I call my valley period. You know, because I was doing two things at the same time. I was walking away from the theater as I had known it, because all they would cast me in were, you know, roles in musical revues, you know, where I'd come out and sing the roof off the joint and no character, no humanity, no dimension, no nothing. So I was over that. And then the record deal imploded at the same time for various reasons. The Celine Dion thing was the straw that broke the camel's back, but I knew that I had to extract myself from these things that were not serving. These spaces weren't serving me. And I didn't know if they ever would. And I knew that I was going to have to create my own space. I didn't know what that looked like, but I knew that I needed a change to be able to just like jolt myself into doing something different. I'm kind of in that space again right now.
Yeah, sometimes whether we like it or not, we have to jump into the void. And again, I guess it goes back to that thing of like trusting the timing, trusting that things, even when they feel like they're kind of going off track, are going in a new direction. But you had, I don't know if it was exactly the same time, but around this time, you also lost your voice to acid reflux. Now, hearing you already talk about the fact that your voice was your armor, it was you were singing for survival, to lose that gift must have been utterly terrifying.
It was terrifying and inspiring, motivating at the same time, because I'm a manifester. I believe in manifestation. So I had been speaking my specific desire into the universe, which was, I am more than my voice, actually. It's not just about my voice. I'm more than my voice. However, I was too afraid to step out on faith in without leading with my singing voice first. Without leading with that. I was too afraid to not lead with that. So it had to go away. So I would be forced to not lead with that. Be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you ask for. I asked to be seen as more than my voice. So I had to do the work that was required to achieve that distinction.
Mm. Did you also feel that there was some sort of emotional resonance? You know, not just there being a physical problem, but could you sense that your voice disappeared because there was something that you needed to say or you wanted to say or you couldn't say?
All of those things. It was like when you come out of this, who are you going to be?
Mm.
Are you still going to be trying to please everybody? Are you still going to be trying to be something that you're not so you can, what, be famous? Okay. Once again, that's all ego. And as an artist, as a real artist, I've had to navigate that space a lot and discern what is ego versus what is calling and how to choose the latter and snatch that ego shit back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's the trickier but much more interesting route because, as you said at the start of the chat, you know, this world that we move in with, whether it's, you know, music or the stuff that I do, it can be incredibly narcissistic. So to choose the route of service or calling is a much tougher route. Going down the ego route, it's easy. We can all go and court fame and the sort of superficial elements of it easily enough because the framework's there. But to go down the other route, that's a longer, harder road to take. But I guess once you know, there's no other option.
Well, yeah, there's no other option. And for me, it was the only way. Because my purpose here is something different on this earth, right? My purpose is different. When you are successful in show business, sometimes, particularly in front of the camera, the performing talent, sometimes the byproduct of that is some sort of celebrity, some sort of fame. That's a byproduct. And what I'm grateful for is that I learned early on, that's not the reason why you do what we do. Sometimes it's a byproduct, but I'm going to be doing it anyway, whether that celebrity and that fame and that money set for life kind of situation comes or not, I'm going to be doing this, whatever this is, anyway. You know, that's a real artist.
Yeah. And it's led you to do some incredibly interesting projects. And obviously, you've gone on to have just the most sensationally diverse career, dynamic career. There's so many different moving parts to what you do. And during...
Yes, thank
well,
you
it's,
for
it's a beautiful
that.
Thing. But, you know, during that period, I'm guessing, which was challenging, to then move into this era where you're doing these incredible musical theatre roles. Obviously, you have a new album coming out, but also some seriously interesting TV work.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very interesting because as an actor, you have to go through these motions and you have to draw on emotion, which can be incredibly painful and hard to relive things or even reenact things that feel slightly familiar. How has that helped you heal? Has that helped you get to a better cognitive place with the things that you've experienced?
The short answer is yes. You know, I feel like Kinky Boots was healing for me because, you know, the character of Lola forgives her father. And I had to forgive both my fathers. So the act of practicing that through a role every day got me to the other side of something. You know, I was so happy that somebody was finally taking me seriously as an actor that I had no idea how triggering it was, what it was doing to my body and to my emotional space. Because as actors, the body doesn't know the difference when we put ourselves through this stuff. So, you know, I was HIV positive playing this role of a character who is HIV positive. And I hadn't told anybody. I mean, I told my sister and my closest friends, but I hadn't even told my mother, you know? And so I was going to work every day, reliving the 80s and 90s, which was nothing but trauma. I was a kid. I lost more people by the age of 21 to AIDS than my 85-year-old grandmother had. You know, we fought for our lives. I came out at 16 in 1985. We went straight to the front lines to fight for our lives. And we won. The antiretroviral drug came out in 96. And true to American form, the whole thing was erased like it didn't happen. You know, we like to act like shit doesn't happen in America. I don't know about the rest of the world. I'm only paying attention to America because this is where I'm at. I think y'all have a few issues over there too. Come on, somebody. Brexit.
Yeah.
Come on, somebody.
I don't think it's much better anywhere.
I don't think it's much better anywhere. And it's so interesting to me that, like, you know, because these shining cities on the hill, these countries that we live in, manage to, like, it's like, oh, we're so powerful and we're so great, but America's built on slavery. And y'all are the first colonizers. Y'all are the colonizers.
Yep.
Of the world. Y'all stole everything.
Yep.
And you're just, it's like, as you get older, and this relates to my art, because as I've gotten older, there is no place in my space for lies at all. I'm telling the truth everywhere I go, every single time, every moment. And I don't care anymore what that makes people on the outside feel. I'm not trying to make you feel comfortable. The world is uncomfortable. So we all feel uncomfortable. You know, it's powerful to be an artist.
Yeah.
It's a really powerful thing. And I feel honored and humbled every day, you know?
Yeah, it's truly powerful. And going back to that notion of service, it's helpful. It's helping other people. Yeah. Rather than, again, showing up because of ego or you want a round of applause, you're showing up because you want to help people.
Trauma. You know, I wrote a memoir called Unprotected. It's about using art to heal trauma. I'm still in the healing process of all of it. You know, some days I'm great. Some days I'm not at all. And that is the process. And that is the journey. And I'm learning to love the journey.
Yeah. That's all we can do, because there might not ever be an end goal where any of us feel truly healed, truly okay, truly in balance forever. It's, you know, all we've got is the journey. That's all we've got.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I'm really interested in what is the difference between acting something out and being triggered detrimentally versus being triggered or having that exposure to a memory and it being healing. It must be a very fine line.
It's a very fine line, and I discovered that fine line through specific trauma therapy. So when COVID happened, I went into trauma therapy with a specialist, and we started doing this thing called prolonged exposure. There's EMDR and there's prolonged exposure. I don't know what EMDR is, because that was something at the beginning of the pandemic that needed to be done in person, and we couldn't do it in person. I think they've now figured out a way to do it online, EMDR, but I did prolonged exposure. And prolonged exposure is essentially taking what your index trauma is, speaking it into a recorder, and then listening it back to it in between sessions and monitoring your SUDS levels. SUDS, the acronym meaning subjective units of distress, aka anxiety. And so the idea is that you change the neuro pathways of your brain to understand that the thing can't hurt you anymore. And what my therapist discovered was that in my work, I was trying to do that the whole time. That's why I was trying to find work that mattered. And not just the teen angel in Greece, and not just, you know, Smokey Joe's Cafe, and not just like random frivolous stuff, but like, give me, you know, I saw Angels in America, Tony Kushner's Angels in America by myself, 1994, the character of Belize. You know, it was the first time I saw a human being, a queer black man reflected back at myself. Jeffrey Wright played it so beautifully. So I always understood that my art was healing.
I mean, if you end up in a theater role or a TV role, a film role down the line, whatever it is, and you know that the subject matter could be triggering, knowing what you do now about exposure therapy and trauma therapy, what would you have in place to ensure that you could move through that role as peacefully as possible?
Probably double therapy a week. Probably double trauma therapy a week.
Yeah.
That the producers pay for.
Of course. Too bloody right. Too bloody right. You're giving them your heart and your soul. It's the least they can do. Yeah. But it's a big deal. It's a big deal to go through it. And is therapy something that you still regularly do, whether you're working on something triggering or not?
Always. I'm trying to stay sane in this crazy ass world.
Anyway. Yeah. I hear you.
I gotta go talk to somebody about it, baby.
Same. I hear you. Same. I find the trauma therapy aspect of things so interesting. I've talked to countless people who have tried all different modalities and different things work for different people, but it is so wonderful that the brain has that neuroplasticity to create new pathways to change how we react to things around us. I've done EMDR. I actually did do it online during the pandemic, and I found it.
You did. So they did find out how to do
game
it.
Game changing.
Yeah. Do you have the tappers and stuff?
Do you know what? There was either you could do the eyes across the screen, which I couldn't get on with. I hate Zoom altogether, but so that was too hectic. So I did this bilateral tapping. And
right.
I don't know how it works or what's going on, but oh my God, it is absolutely incredible. And it's, you know, I'm always relatively frustrated, I think, working in this space and talking about mental health a lot, that, you know, I've been very lucky that I've been able to access that. You know, you've been able to find a brilliant therapist out there, but there's so many people who have had such awful trauma.
And
we need to, I don't know what the answer is, but it needs to be more readily available. And that's down to politics and healthcare systems and all sorts of shit that's out of our control. But it is game changing. It's game changing stuff. We even did an episode on here the other day, right? On psychedelic therapy for trauma. Incredible results. Incredible results. I'm so intrigued.
Ketamine.
Yeah.
They're using ketamine right now. And you know, as a club kid, I'm just going to make myself.
Please do. Yeah, you do it.
It's more than good. You know, as a club kid in the 90s, and, you know, I partook in recreational drugs. And my favorite was ketamine. And I was like, and now it's like, oh, all right, that kind of makes sense. A bunch of my friends are doing like ayahuasca, all that stuff. I don't know. I'm thinking about, you know, some of their stories are not the greatest. I don't hear the greatest stories. Makes me a little nervous about the throwing up and the purging and all of that. But I guess, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm trying to just be as healed as possible.
Yeah, the ayahuasca one for me, I think, sounds too intense. But I think psilocybin, maybe some of the other slightly more gentle ones could be extremely interesting. Hey, I also wanted to talk about a recent Instagram post of yours that I absolutely loved, where you were with your stylist, Ty. And you were questioning why people say, I could never pull that off. And you were saying, you just put it on, that's how you pull it off. And that has so stuck with me. And it not only inspired me on that day that I watched it, but I also did my own little Instagram post inspired by yours, very much referencing you. I did not steal it. Very much gave you the due credit. No, I gave you the due credit because it was a day where, you know, we all have these days where we feel a bit shy, we want to hide a bit. And I had this dress and I bought it in a market and it was kind of pleated green sheer. And I knew that you'd be able to see like my hot pants and bra, but I was like, oh, I don't know whether I should wear it. And then I watched your video and was like, I'm wearing it. And I wore it out and I felt fantastic all night. I loved wearing it. And I put a picture of me in the dress and all my lovely followers were, again, like thanking you, going, oh my God, I've got this wedding coming up. I'm going to wear that bloody hat I didn't feel brave enough to wear. I was going to wear that, whatever. And it's like, wow, so many of us, I think, feel so stuck in a rut with how, if we give ourselves permission to express and to have fun with clothing, and that feels like something space. That we miss.
It's a taking up space, you know, because we live in a world where the power structure is meant to silence anything that doesn't fit into the status quo. You know, there are mechanisms in place, conscious or unconscious, that stifle, keep us in chains. You know, little things that are not even like, I mean, I hate the word microaggression, but like they're micro things because we don't, they seem just normal. Like, you know, like the politicization of something. Oh, you've politicized it. Well, of course I have. Everything is political. What are you talking about? What you're saying is shut up. That's what you're saying. When you when the GOP over here comes out against Lizzo because she went to the South and dared to call out Ron DeSantis or something, or the Don't Say Gay bill or drag queens are illegal or whatever, she dared to say something from her concert tour, then they're telling her that she's politicizing it. Yes! You're trying to take my rights away. Yes, I am. What you're saying is shut up. It's the same thing in the creative space too. When I'm working, when I'm writing something. Oh, it's too preachy. Fuck that. Yeah, it is. Yes, it is. On purpose. What do you think it's going to be? This world is crazy. Somebody needs to be preaching about something.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stay here silent. You're not going to shut me up, because that's what it means, you know, and we have to be careful with that. We have to be careful. Our governments are this patriarchy. It's like, oh, shut up and sing, this shut up and sing, this shut up and dance, this shut up and dribble, this, oh, you're a prostitute, so your opinion doesn't matter, bullshit. I'm not having any of that. Oh, I almost made it through an entire podcast without being politically extra. Then you just got to right at the end. You're like, this bitch is not, she's not screaming yet. I got it.
I love it. I love it. Look, this is your time and space. You say what you want. You can screech and preach and do the whole thing. I don't care. I love it. It's great. But it's passion. It's passion. And as you say, you know, clothing can be very political, and clothing is about taking up space. And I think the majority of people, you know, not even in the public eye, I'm talking about the majority of people feel small, they don't feel heard, they don't feel seen, and they are scared to say what they think. And that's why I like what you're doing, because you're championing those that will stand up and say what they want to say or will do things differently. But, you know, it's all very well and good you saying stuff and being a game changer. It's a beautiful thing, but it's tiring. It's a tiring thing, because I was looking back at pictures of you over the years, and like, obviously that beautiful moment of you turning up to the Oscars in, was it 2019, in your tuxedo gown. And that was where I think the red carpet for men started to get a bit interesting, because before that it was entirely boring. Like, oh, no, I don't even want to look. It's just all the blokes in suits. Mm-hmm. And then it's now a lot more interesting. And that is a great feeling for you. You're a game changer. You set a new precedent. You set a new standard. Yet very, very tiring to get to the place of being able to do so, because you've had to go through being unaccepted, being denied the right onto the red carpet to wear the dress. So it's all wonderful to have that feeling, but it's a hell of a lot of work to get there.
It's a hell of a lot of work to get there, and it's a hell of a lot of work to maintain.
Yes.
What I think people don't understand is that to be the fabulous thing that you see me being costs money. It costs a lot of money to do that. And oftentimes I have to pay for that shit myself. You know, and ultimately it's about me reinvesting into the company. I'm the company. I'm the brand.
I think we've covered a lot of subjects. We've covered a lot of ground. It's been a joy to talk to you, an absolute joy.
It's been a joy to talk to you too, because I just have to say it's really nice to speak to people who actually do the research to understand me and have real conversations with me. You know, because the conversation that I've started is, see, it just falls out. I don't do anything. It just falls out. You know, because the conversation I'm having is fabulous and serious do coexist.
Yes. Yes.
And we live in a world where it's not seen like that. So I appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you.
I appreciate
you. Nothing's two dimensional, is it? There's no one person that is just fabulous or is just serious or is just sexy or is just whatever. Like, everyone's got all these different layers to them. And that's, you know, probably the most interesting thing about my job is I get to explore that. But honestly, it's been so lovely. And thank you so much for being on the podcast. And I hope I get to see you in real life at some point.
Yeah, I'm coming over there, child. I got to be over there.
Yes.
I'm coming.
I'm absolutely obsessed that he got up and made himself a little cuppa in the middle of that chat. That's what we like, just keeping it real. We were, after all, in Billy's house, so he does what he wants. We want everyone to feel at home on Happy Place, so I'm so glad that Billy did. And, oh, Billy, I just loved that chat so much. I loved spending time with Billy. We covered some really difficult stuff, and it also just felt very inspiring, actually. Billy, thank you so much for your time. Billy's single, Break a Sweat, is out right now. And if you love that song, you will absolutely adore his album to come, which is called The Black Mona Lisa. We mentioned psychedelics being used as part of trauma therapy. If you want to learn more about that, then please do listen to a recent episode we did with Professor David Nutt. It was a mind-blowing conversation and one that I still think about all the time. I think you'll really enjoy it. I'll be back next week, so do click the follow button so you're always notified when a brand new episode is available if you haven't already. Until then, huge, huge thanks to the gorgeous Billy, to the producers of this episode, Anushka Tate and Sophie King at Rethink Audio, and to you, because you are the bloody greatest.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.